Heterodorks. Heterodox dorks.
Hello, TERFs and trannies. You are listening to the Heterodorks podcast. I am your co-host, Nina Paley, a canceled artist, or as somebody gave me unsolicited advice to describe myself as, an artist whose work has been removed from curricula.
The artist formerly known as not canceled.
Yes.
And I am your other co-host, Corinna Cohn. I am an aspiring shelf stalker.
Shelf stalker?
Yeah, because how nice would it be to have work where all you do is put things on a shelf? You are given a plan. You don't have to figure out where it goes. You know that the box has to face outwards so that people can see it. I want simple, mind-numbing, repetitive work, Nina. That's what I aspire to.
Huh. And so you're no longer aspiring to be an alpaca? You want to be a shelf stalker?
I am a Renaissance tranny. I want to do it all.
Okay. A tranny, an alpaca, and a shelf stalker. And by the way, when you say shelf stalker, I'm just picturing an alpaca stalking, like S-T-A-L-K, like...
Yeah.
Quietly hunting down a shelf.
Yeah, there's a bookshelf in a field. I'm dressed as an alpaca and I'm sneaking up on it.
All right, cool.
I have life goals, Nina.
We have a guest today.
And we do.
Actually, depending on your magnificent editing skills, this might be a very unusual podcast because I believe we're going to feature some of an audio piece made by our friend Lisa Jones.
Might do.
Okay. So our guest is related to this audio piece. Her name is Ellen Danick. Is that how you pronounce it? Danick. Tomato.
Danick. It's like a cherry Danish with a nick.
Is it from the word Danish? Is that where it came from?
I think it has something to do with being Danish in Germany. So I did the very unmodern thing and took my husband's name when we got married. And his father was from Germany, and he warned me that I would be miserable with this name because no one can remember it, they can't spell it, they can't pronounce it, all of which is true. But I don't actually know the details of the origin. I spend a lot of time just spelling it for people.
Okay. How long ago did you change your name?
It's been 15 years now, shocking everyone who knew me as a radical feminist when I was a teenager.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Yeah. Well, we could have a whole discussion based on that. But instead, we have to talk about a bonkers Colorado state house, or bananas, I think, is how Lisa described it.
That's apt.
So what's the 411? What's going on here?
Here in Colorado, we have a state body, the legislature, the General Assembly. There's a lower house with 65 members, the House. There's an upper house with 35, the Senate. The House has a supermajority of Democrats, many of whom are appointed right now. There were a lot of vacancies created by representatives running for and winning other offices. So we have a lot of appointees to fill those vacancies, many of whom are from the Democratic Socialists of America.
Oh, no.
And oh, yes. And one of the topics that is getting a lot of push for legislation right now is gender ideology. And it's a topic that I am very interested in and have strong views about. It took me over 2 years of reading and thinking to come to what I think about gender and all the things that go along with that. And now that I have, I can't leave it alone. It's the topic I have my teeth in, and I think it's important, and it's something I'm spending time on. So one of the bills that was before the legislature, it still is here in Colorado, is a bill to make it easier for convicted felons to change their names if they affirm that their gender identity has changed. So right now, if you're a convicted felon in Colorado and you want to change your name, you go before a judge and you have to demonstrate good cause for a name change to the judge. So for example, if you want to live like it's 1954, change your name to agree with your spouse, the judge would weigh that on one hand against what crimes were you committed of? What's brought you here as a convicted felon? If you've kited a few checks, maybe that's okay. If you've molested a bunch of children, maybe that's not. It's up to him or her. This particular bill, House Bill 1071, would make a self-proclaimed change of gender identity the one and only thing that would be good cause in and of itself to change your name. Now, I'm no legal expert, but the way I read the bill, if you are a convicted felon, regardless of what you're convicted of, if you affirm that your gender identity has changed and you want to change your name, the judge has to grant that name change. I think this is a bad idea, and so I went to testify against the bill in committee.
Let me double check something here. The current status quo is if I'm a convicted felon, let's say I don't know any good felonies off the top of my head, but let's say I did something like
copyright infringement.
Copyright infringement.
Felony, yeah. Copyright infringement.
That's what I meant to say, is felony copyright infringement. And I went to the judge and I said, hey, I want to be called this other thing now. The judge might say, yeah, that's fine. Go ahead. And that's the current state.
Or the judge might say, that's not a great idea. You can't change your name.
Yeah, the judge might say that too. And I suppose if that happened, then I could maybe appeal, I guess, maybe not, or maybe try again some other time. Maybe there's a, I don't know how that works, but at any rate, it's not that I'm prohibited from it. It's that a judge has to approve it before it can happen. That's the current status quo.
That is correct.
Well, that doesn't seem that crazy.
It doesn't. One of the arguments that the proponents of this bill make is that if you're leaving this decision up to a judge's discretion, you might get variability based on jurisdiction and even individual judges in how sympathetic or not they might be to your reason to change your name.
Right.
Can't have that.
So instead we just say, all right, everybody can change their name as long as they're changing their gender identity, then they can also change their name.
As long as they claim they're changing their gender identity, then that is in and of itself good cause for a name change and needs to be granted. You are correct.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You know,
so
if it were for pretty much any non-victim felony, I might be sympathetic to that. Like you talked about, well, I don't know. Now that I think about it, if I committed fraud under one name, if I'm a judge, maybe I don't want people to change their names if they've committed felony fraud. But now they can still change their names if they've committed felony fraud and also they declare that they've changed their gender identity.
Correct. If this bill passes. And as is so often the case, it starts in committees in the committee that it's assigned to. In this case, it's the Judiciary Committee in the lower house, the lower body of the House, which considers it. And then if it passes out of committee, it's considered by the full body. And then if it's passed by the full body, it goes on to the other house and then perhaps eventually to, the governor for signature. I know you have a lot of experience with this, Karina, so I don't have to explain it to you, but it works in Colorado the way it does a lot of places.
But people listening might not be up on that, so I appreciate you explaining it.
Seemed like the arguments in favor of the bill were, we suffer so much, our feelings are so hurt, and the other argument is they suffer so much and there's so much hate. That seemed like the reasoning.
That's a very good summary. So in the committee, there were 20 plus activists there in support of the bill who had clearly a strong relationship with at least two members of the committee, including the woman sponsoring the bill. There were two people, including myself, there to testify against the bill. And it was an interesting experience. So there were other bills under consideration. This was the final one. We were there for 6+ hours before this bill came up. And during the testimony on other bills, at one point, the sergeant at arms, who is the security person for the committee, came to get the woman sitting next to me, the other woman who was there to testify against the bill, who I met that day, and asked her to step out in the hallway. And I thought that was strange, but I wondered if maybe there had been a threat against her safety, because the activists were sitting in front of us, and earlier a couple of them have been passing around a phone with a photo of her on it from one of her social media accounts saying, "Ooh, that's the turf sitting behind us." So I thought, I don't know, maybe he's concerned about her safety. But then I heard through the door some raised voices and I stepped outside. And it turned out there had been a back and forth between the woman who was there to testify against the bill and the person the bill is named after, who goes by Tierra. And Tierra, who was one of the 20 plus people sitting there, had been made to feel unsafe by the little 5'4" woman sitting next to me and had asked the sergeant at arms to remove her.
Oh, man. Did she have COVID or something? Is that why people felt unsafe? Because don't they wear a lot of masks, too, when they go in public?
There was a lot of mask wearing, a lot of mask taking off. I couldn't really figure out what prompted that. It was, I don't know, maybe it was theatrical. But no, she didn't have COVID. She just had gender critical beliefs and an unwillingness to say things that were contrary to fact, which didn't go over well.
Well, I heard that people were traumatized by microaggressions at this very event.
I'm sure that happened. I'm sure it's happening now somewhere in the state capitol just because the three of us are having this conversation.
So I want to get some sense of what's happening here because I wasn't there. Prior to the best of your knowledge, and maybe you don't know, prior to this intervention with the sergeant at arms, is that the role?
That's his title, sergeant at arms.
Right. Had she already been having interactions in person with this other individual? Were they yelling at each other or anything?
No. In fact, that was what was so weird about it. Apparently, there was some back and forth on social, and the woman sitting next to me, the woman who was called out by the sergeant at arms, had said, "You know, if I'm making you so upset, I'm sitting two rows behind you. Why don't you just come talk to me in person?" And that was apparently the comment that made Tierra feel unsafe and need to summon the sergeant at arms.
I see. So there was maybe some back and forth on social media that day or simultaneously, and that's why the sergeant at arms intervened. Well, you know, if that is what happened, I don't think that that's entirely bizarre, as long as the sergeant at arms was just saying, "Hey, I want to make sure everything's going to be cool here," because part of the tone or part of the environment of a committee meeting is that there's not supposed to be shenanigans, right?
No, you expect everybody to behave with respect and be professional, of course. I will say it is a tiny bit unsettling when a large group of people is passing around a camera with a photo of the woman sitting next to you saying, "That's the turf." Because when they say that, they're not using turf in the way that you or Nina or even I might, in kind of a cheeky, self-referential way. They're using it as a slur, kind of aggressively. And we were outnumbered 10-1. So I thought that in and of itself was not behavior that you might want to encourage in a committee room. But of course, I'm not going to go tattle to the sergeant at arms, especially because it didn't have anything to do with me.
Right. Was this your first time testifying in a state house?
Yes, it was.
And what did you do to prepare for it?
Well, tried to do some research as to who the committee members were. So, as I mentioned earlier, the Democrats have a supermajority in the legislature. There was no chance that anything I might say in that committee hearing was going to make a difference to this bill passing. It was going to pass. But there were 8 Democrats on the committee and 3 Republicans. The 3 Republicans, pretty sure thing they're going to vote against it. The 8 Democrats, I wanted to find a proxy for who might be open to considering a no vote. And so I looked at how they'd voted in the past. And last year, there was a bill in the Colorado legislature that enhanced the penalty for the offense of indecent exposure if the victim was a child. So if you flash somebody and they were a kid, it would be a bigger offense than if you flash somebody and they were an adult. And many Democrats voted against that bill, which kind of surprised me because it seems like a no-brainer. Flashing kids, not something you want to be in favor of. And many of those Democrats were on the committee, but there was one particular representative from an area near Colorado Springs, who's a Democrat, who had voted for that bill. And I thought, oh, he might be open to at least considering that this name change bill could be dangerous. And so I had geared my testimony to him. And so when I testified, the person that I was talking to really was this one particular representative. And that's who I geared my testimony for. So if we fast forward to when we actually testified, we can talk about that. The woman before me got up and testified. We were sitting next to each other. We were called to testify at the witness table. So four people had testified for the bill, and then they were going to alternate and have the two of us testify against it. The woman I was sitting next to testified first, and she had some prepared remarks, but I could feel when she went, she decided to go rogue and go away from her prepared remarks. And I had a feeling about what was going to happen, because before we testified, we had been admonished by two members of the committee, including the chair, twice, that the committee would not tolerate the following: dead naming, misgendering, or mentioning an individual's criminal record, which struck me as strange because this bill is called Tierra's Law. It is named for and inspired by a male individual with a criminal record.
Well, hang on, Ellen. We don't here at the Heterodorks, we don't want to put up with any of this dead naming or what else was it?
Well, here's what's not allowed in the Judiciary Committee in Colorado in the legislature: dead naming, misgendering, or mentioning the criminal record of an individual.
Yeah. So Corey,
hey. Hey.
What? I don't know what his problem is. All right.
Hey.
But Corey apparently committed felony copyright infringement.
Hey. I wasn't convicted.
All right. Am I going to be kicked off the podcast now?
Yeah, I'm just going to.
It's looking that
felony microaggressions.
I'm going to control A and delete your audio track. And it's just going to be Ellen and I.
Yeah. That I have to say that the audio of that event really was like jaw dropping. I and my friend who was listening to it with me, we're like our jaws dropped, not to the floor. They're still attached to our skulls, but our mouths hung open with.
Well, how about I put in that audio right here?
Hi, guys. My name is Christina Goki. I am a resident of Colorado Springs. I'm also a co-founder of Rocky Mountain Women's Network. I am here to oppose this bill. We shouldn't be making it easier for felons to change their name. Names matter. Allowing felons to legally change their name is dangerous to the public. The public does not have access to people's social security numbers. Okay? So the best we can do when sizing up a potential friend or love interest or babysitter is to do a Google search or use a website like Truthfinder, right? So if we don't even have the correct name of the person we are looking into, how would we know if they were a sex offender, a pedophile, or a murderer? The proponents of this bill will say that the crimes stay with the social security number of the felon, right? How does that help the general public? This bill would make it easier for predators to target single moms, young women, and children. There's absolutely no reason why we should be making it easier for felons to hide their crimes. Does Colorado really value the feelings of convicted felons more than women and children, who will most certainly be put in more danger by this bill? So I'm asking you guys to vote no on this. the person who this bill is being named after, you know, they're an admitted former prostitute.
Ms. Koki, I'm going to urge you to be...
Are you going to impinge on my free speech? First Amendment gives me fright.
I am going to urge you to keep your testimony, please, to the bill. Do not get into individual personalities.
The bill is literally named after him. Misgendering is not a crime. You know what? I'm correctly sexing. You know, sex matters. Gender is nothing. It means nothing. Sex matters. It matters in prisons. It matters in sports. It matters in my bathroom. Misgendering is nothing. It means nothing. I correctly sex everybody.
All right.
So the person this bill is written after is literally an admitted former prostitute and other obvious charges.
Sure, I'm not
and
that.
And he works with children.
The committee is going to be in recess.
Who now they do burlesque with.
Nope, you gave her too many warnings. It's not okay.
You know what? This is my time. I let them speak.
But yeah, it was shocking.
What was it that made your jaw? What shocked you the most, Nina? I'm curious.
So much of it, the behavior of, what was the name of the politician who was speaking the most, the female?
Representative Leslie Herod. Representative Leslie Herod.
She was so, pardon my French here, she was so full of shit and abusing her position, in my opinion. I mean, to go like right off the bat, like she was so extremely biased, and she was everyone was sort of captive to her biases, and she had no discretion about that. That was part of it.
Yeah, that's being a committee chair, they get to do stuff like that.
So to be clear, Representative Herod is not the chair. She's
oh, really?
Not the vice chair. She's a member of the committee. The chair is Representative Weissman, and the vice chair is Representative Bacon. Representative Herod is a member of the committee who was communicating with the activists, as was Representative Garcia, the sponsor of the bill, who is also a member of the committee. But Representative Herod is not.
And the chair just let her get away with that? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, the chair, Representative Weissman, was one of the two people who warned us in advance that during testimony, dead naming, misgendering, and talking about an individual's criminal record would not be allowed.
Like, right. I don't get why can't you talk about their criminal record? That's what this is about. It's like, how do they get to make those rules that somebody coming to testify on a bill like this isn't allowed to talk about this? How is that? Could they set any rules at all? Could they say like, well, we will not tolerate any criticism of this bill? I mean, they might as well.
Well, can I answer that in three parts, Nina? Mm-hmm. And I'll be brief. One is, right now, on the topic of gender, the authoritarian illiberal left believes it is empowered to do whatever it wants. So regardless of what is and isn't allowed, this is what's happening. And if you're just a rando like me who's shown up for the first time to testify in a committee, I can't push back on that. That's what we're doing. Number two, even though this bill is named for this particular person who goes by Tierra, the way that the bill is being sold is that Tierra moved here from Florida. And Tierra, also legally a man named Dwayne Kelly, has a criminal record in Florida, is a convicted felon. But in Florida, if you have three misdemeanors, that equates to a felony. And so you might be a convicted felon, but you might just have three misdemeanors. Well, as it turns out, this particular individual has a long history of felony offenses, including solicitation for sex and driving under the influence and a whole bunch of things. And so if you're going to actually talk about the criminal record of the person who inspired this bill and for whom this bill is named, it's not particularly good as a marketing ploy, because this isn't somebody who has three misdemeanors and therefore a felony and is just trying to shake off a few bad decisions in their past. This is somebody with a long history of felony offenses. So that's the second way I would answer that question. And then the third way is, there was a lot of signaling back and forth between the trans activists who were in the room and the members of the committee who were so bullish on this bill. And one of the ways that the members of the committee could show those activists that I am really on your side is to make these rules about what is and isn't allowed to be said.
I was discussing with my friend afterwards why, like, who could it possibly benefit to have a law like this? I know there's a lot of money in, I guess, the LGBTQ++. There's been a lot of funding for trans issues, trans rights, I guess, men's rights. But who does it, like, people with money and power, how does it benefit people with money and power to have felons able to change their names?
That is a great question, and I don't know the answer to that. You know, I listened to your episode a year ago when you had Helen Joyce on talking about the influx of money around trans ideology and how that has affected traditionally gay and lesbian organizations, particularly after the battle for gay marriage was won in the US. And she makes a really good argument that if you're having to look for the next horizon and the next event to build momentum and excitement around to raise money, just keeping gay marriage legal isn't an easy thing to sell. But making particular things available for people who are trans is a discrete thing you can try to achieve. So getting biological men to be able to compete in women's sports, putting biological men in women's prisons, making traditionally female-only spaces such as sexual violence support groups available to biological men, all of whom were trans-identified. Those are discrete things you can push for, and you can raise money against those goals. So I think that Helen Joyce is on to something there. I think that's a big part of it. But I'm with you, Nina. That doesn't feel like a complete explanation. This particular law, it would benefit someone like the person it's named after, because Tierra teaches drag classes for kids in Colorado Springs. And if parents did even a minimum of due diligence, they would know about the history, the criminal history that this teacher has. But if the teacher changes their name, then that becomes harder to research. And I'll tell you one place where that's kind of important. When you go to buy a gun in Colorado, you have a 3-day waiting period, and you have to fill out an application, and you have to answer a bunch of questions. One of the items that's optional to provide is your social security number. So if you have changed your name, one of the arguments for this bill is, oh, well, you know, your social security number tracks. You don't get to change your social security number. Well, if you're mentally unstable, and you have changed your name, and you're a convicted felon, and you're up to no good, and I'm not saying that's everybody, it only takes one, and you are trying to purchase a weapon, having a new name and not having to provide your social security number could make that a lot easier.
I think you made a really good point in your testimony that if this law passes, it's going to particularly endanger women.
Yeah, let's play that right now so that everybody can hear it.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity to talk to the committee tonight. My name is Ellen Danick. I live in Denver, and I'm here representing myself. I appreciate you being willing to hear my testimony. I think that House Bill 1071 is a bad bill, and I urge the members of the Judiciary Committee to vote against it. The name sounds appealing. Tierra's Law, to me, that sounds sparkly. It sounds kind and harmless, but that's a smokescreen. This bill's result will be violent criminals claiming a new gender identity solely to change their names, and judges won't be able to exercise their discretion to stop it. I think Representative Soper's questions helped highlight that. Currently, if a felon shows good cause, a judge can grant a name change, and in general, we want to be able to track people who've been convicted of felonies, especially violent ones. There should be very few cases where those criminals can change their identities. This bill, though, goes around a judge's discretion. Under this proposed law, any criminal, even a violent sex offender, can assert that he feels like he's a different gender and that that feeling constitutes good cause, so the judge must grant the name change. This bill creates incentives for bad actors to claim a different gender so that they can change their names. There's no limit in the bill regarding the crimes the petitioner could have been convicted of. For example, men convicted of sexually assaulting children can claim in bad faith to be women solely to be able to change their names, and judges will have to grant those name changes because that's good cause. And if you think this won't happen, I think you're being naive. If there's anything we know about safeguarding, it's that you don't protect against the average or the most likely case. You protect against the predators because bad guys look for any opening. I think that if you vote for this bill, when women and children are attacked as a result, and I'm afraid it will happen, you can't claim you weren't warned or that you didn't know. 1071 is a bad bill, and I ask you all to vote against it. Thanks for your time.
Do you think that misogyny is deep enough so that as an unconscious motivation, that might be a reason which people would support this bill, is that they want a more terrorized female population?
I don't think most people have thought about it in that way. And I mean, look, misogyny is powerful, but I don't think that misogyny is necessarily the explanation for all bad decisions around topics like this. I think a lot of people maybe where I was 3 or 4 years ago, they just haven't thought about it. You know, they haven't thought about the implications. They just hear, oh, this is for trans people. Trans people are like gay people. I think gay people should be given equal rights. This is probably about equal rights for trans people. That sounds good. I'm okay with that. I mean, I remember standing in my kitchen 3+ years ago and the topic of men competing in women's sports, which isn't what this law is about, but I'll use it to make my point. That topic came up over drinks. And I remember looking at my husband and saying, no man would claim to be a woman just so he could win a trophy in a woman's sport. There's no honor in that. And he looked at me and said, you don't know men. So I think, and it was after that, that I started, you know, it's a familiar story. Many of your guests have told it, that I started reading and thinking about this particular topic and realized that my good gee whiz liberal orientation to everything that had extended to when I thought of someone who was trans, I thought of John Malkovich playing Roberto Muldoon in The World According to Garp. This is somebody with good intentions, who's very unusual and very rare and deserving of my empathy and whatever I can do to make this person feel better and more like they belong. If Roberto Muldoon wants to be called she, I'll do that. That's not a problem. I had no idea what the other implications were. And when I look at people like you two who figured this out so much earlier than I did, I'm impressed because you saw the implications and you were willing to speak up about it in an environment that was much more punishing than the one we're in now. Yeah, I just think a lot of people who would be in favor of this law, they just haven't thought about it very deeply. I don't necessarily think misogyny has to be a big driver or even a driver of it. I mean, tell me if you disagree with me.
Well, I just keep thinking, I'm not thinking it's a conscious driver. It's just things keep working out this way and people get excited about things that seem to have this consequence. I don't think it's conscious at all or very much. It's striking to me, that's another thing that made our jaws drop, was hearing these women's voices, this legislator whose name I keep forgetting, Herod, like from the Bible. Like, we're hearing a woman's voice pushing for this and manipulating reality so this can happen. And we're just like, how can this be? This is, I mean, of course, we've been doing this for the last 6 years. Like, how can women be such cheerleaders for policies that harm women?
Yeah. Why do we keep doing this, Nina?
Are you being facetious saying that we, like, you're a woman? Are you, is that what you're implying? Corey?
I believe that's a trap you just walked into, Nina.
You know, hanging out with Corey here is like continually walking into a trap.
Yes, I am something of a trap online.
Something of a trap, yes.
Let's get back, though, to this point, because I want to point out something, Ellen, which is that when I was in, actually, Indiana was pretty easy, but when I'm giving testimony in Ohio, giving testimony in Texas, the most ardent supporters of the trans position are uniformly and almost entirely women. I have heard this phrase on the internets, and I think it's a pretty good description. It is called toxic femininity or pathological empathy of, oh gosh, there's somebody who's suffering, and suffering is arouses a need for a defense. Somebody who's hurting needs to be defended. And there's no evaluation of whether or not their suffering is just or necessary. It is that somebody is suffering and therefore they need a champion. They need a mommy to kiss the injury and make it better. And for Tiara, I guess the injury is, I don't like the name that's on my license, so I need somebody to kiss it and make it better.
All right. What about women who are suffering? Is the problem that they're not given a voice? Is the problem that when women suffer, let's say in these jails or these female athletes that are suffering in sports, that their voices, like, why are their voices not registering with these pathologically, toxically feminine politicians?
Well, because they have privilege, of course, Nina.
Because they're women.
Yeah, this is also why poor, uneducated, economically deprived white people are considered to be better off than wealthy, multi-generational, educated, higher educated, socially mobile Black people.
Wait, so are you
because of privilege?
Are you saying then that it's because, wait, is Tiara Black?
Yes.
Oh, so this is like a white guilt performance? Is it like these female politicians are saying, like, yeah, we'll happily throw women under the bus because the sob story is coming from a Black person?
I don't think you can say that in this particular instance. The sponsor is a Hispanic woman, and Leslie Harrod, the woman who was the most vocal and advocating for Tiara, as a Black woman. So no, in this case, I don't think you can say that. But what I will say is the toxic empathy that Corey mentioned, I think is a real phenomenon. And I think it ties in with being self-sacrificing and being a good girl and putting other people's needs in front of your own. And if you've grown up in a generation where you didn't have to fight for basic rights, like not getting sexually assaulted in the bathroom because you have single sex bathrooms and there's a taboo around men coming in there, if you just take that for granted, you can have that level of empathy. I know that because I've experienced that in myself.
But why don't they have empathy for women? Why would they have empathy for these men and not for the women that are being harmed? Right? You can't just say, it's toxic empathy. The empathy is extremely selective.
My guess is it has to do with the particular case and something around aspirational politics. So, for example, it is much, much cooler to be advocating for a trans-identified male like Tiara, because then you're edgy and unicorny and hip and cool, than it is to be advocating for a quote-unquote cisgender woman in jail who doesn't want to get sexually assaulted by a man put in her jail cell. I also think that class plays a role in this. When I look at women in my neighborhood and women in my circle, a lot of us know people, some of them are people who have trans-identified children, trans-identified members of their family, people at work who are trans and proud. None of us know anyone in prison. That's just not part of our world. And so you necessarily feel more empathy for the people that you see as being more part of your group than not part of your group. And then when you layer the coolness factor onto it, I think that heightens it. I also think, and I'm not the first person to observe this, other people have, if you are a mother who has enabled the transition of your child in any sense, you are probably the last person who is ever going to admit that that was harmful and that ideology played a role. Because what you will have to face about the damage that you've done to your child will break your image of yourself and your world. Many people have commented that the last people to turn loose of trans ideology and its impact on children being a good thing will be mothers who have transitioned their children, particularly medically, particularly surgically.
Particularly girls.
Particularly girls.
I mean, all of this makes sense, but I'm really addressing what Corey was saying about how they classify women as privileged, right? Women who are harmed.
Yeah.
Men are privileged.
Let me take a shot at this because I'm going to try to steal a man, right? So these are not necessarily my views. I just want to preface that. When you have a specific person who is the representative of the victim group, which in this case is this, what's his name? David? Tierra?
Dwayne?
Dwayne Tierra
Dwayne,
Kelly.
Sorry. Dwayne. So when you got Dwayne, Miss Tierra in front of you, you've got a specific example of somebody who's a victim. And the victim is that they are a convicted criminal who has been through the carceral system because they have victimized other people, right? So this is somebody who knows a lot about victimhood, having created so many. But you have a member of this class who is specifically being harmed because they are unable to do something that the three of us can with some amount of ease, which is to go in front of a judge and change our names. The victims that you're talking about, Nina, to the best of anybody's knowledge, including ours, including the committee members, there is no specific victim of Tierra who has been sexually assaulted on the basis of Tierra using a false name. So this victim is a person that you have to imagine instead of somebody that you know of, and they are a potential victim instead of an actual victim. And all of that aside is that they are also members of a class which are presumed to have privilege over the class, over the member of the class that is seeking assistance.
Oh, because they're in this trans ideology cult, which says that cis has privilege over trans.
Well, I would call it not the trans cult. I would call it that they are adherents of a collectivist ideology, and that this particular instance of it being related to trans is circumstantial and not really particular to the fact that it's a collectivist ideology.
But nonetheless, they believe that there's like this hierarchy of victimhood.
Oh, yeah.
That any woman who's not trans identified is privileged in relation to anyone who is trans identified.
Yeah, this is the progressive stack.
I don't think that can be litigated or argued in the confines of a legislative process. So, you know, when I was in the room preparing to testify, I was not going to argue about biological reality or forced speech or hierarchy of victimhood or any of that, because first of all, in 2 minutes, you can't. But secondly, that's everybody's armored up. That's not, they're on the defense. That's not the place where that's going to reach anybody. And I would imagine, I've never testified before a full legislative body, but Corey, I would imagine when you were testifying someplace like Ohio, you were not trying to argue that. You were trying to accomplish a specific goal regarding a specific piece of legislation, not to bring people around to your view of the world, right?
Yeah, I was trying to do two things, is help create confidence in the minds of people who were already disposed to vote for that, and to create doubt in the minds of people who weren't sure how they were going to vote.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to
have that perspective. That's great.
I'm just trying to understand this phenomenon. There's no way I would try to argue with people in that context, but
you can't.
Yeah, I am trying to just understand why this stuff is happening on a bigger scale.
Because they're good people, Nina.
I think that's worth trying to understand. And Corey, I think a lot of it is self-identification as a good person. I mean, for me to come out where I have as they say on Turf Island, as gender critical, my teenage self would be having a conniption fit. What do you mean you have gone to the legislature to testify against that poor man who thinks he's a woman? His life, her life, whatever, is already so hard. Do the right thing and make that individual's life easier. What are you even doing? Like, you're a liberal. You need to extend compassion to everyone. You need to extend the benefit of the doubt to everyone. You don't need to be self-interested. And a lot of what advocating for the protection against real harm to women and girls done by trans ideology requires sticking up for people who are like you, which is like sticking up for yourself, which is not what peace, love, and liberalness is about.
But you said earlier,
it's not a comfortable place to end up. This is not where I thought I would end up on this topic.
But you said earlier that these excessively empathetic legislators see the trans identified people as in their group. So they're doing the same thing. None of it is empathy.
I think you're trying to apply logic to feelings, and I think that's going to make you very frustrated.
Oh, yeah. Now that explains a lot. Yeah.
What is it they say about teaching a pig to climb a tree frustrates you and it annoys the pig? I think that's the same thing with trying to apply logic to feelings.
It just seems like a legislature is a place where facts should have some weight.
Oh, my sweet summer child. They do have weight. If you're in the majority and you want to make sure that all of the nails are in the structure, then that's where you want the facts. There's going to be potentially a court challenge, depending on how controversial your legislation is. And that's where you want the facts, is to make sure that when this law appears in front of a judge, that you are already preparing your arguments for the court. That's where you want the facts. But politicians don't make decisions based on fact. Come on, no.
So speaking of that, is this bill likely to actually become a law?
It is very likely to pass the lower house. So the House of Representatives. I would bet a lot of money that it's going to pass that. I don't know if it will pass the Senate, the upper house, because the Democrats there are not as, the Democrats in the Senate are not as representative of what I call the illiberal authoritarian left. It's a different body. It's a different group of representatives. And based on past voting behavior, I don't know if it will pass the upper body or not. Even if it does pass the Senate, I don't know if Governor Polis would sign this. So this is another instance where it's interesting to think about self-interest versus empathy. So you may know that we are a state with an openly gay governor. And one of the things that gay men, especially of a certain age, will tell you is when they were fighting for basic rights, just equality with everybody else in the 60s and 70s in places like England and Canada and the US, one of the groups they had to beat off with a stick was the pedophiles, who wanted to glom on to the gay rights movement and get their whole deal, their paraphilia, legitimized. And these men remember that. And I don't think Governor Polis is quite old enough to have been part of that. But that'll be, you know, part of the history that he's aware of. And so what does he do when he thinks about, just as an individual, this law, his self-interest as a gay man not being tarred with that brush, or appealing to the very extreme parts of the Democratic Party that are in ascendancy in Colorado right now? It's an interesting question. Hmm. Coming back to the political lens on it, Colorado for a long time was a purple state, and that's really no longer true. It's a blue state. We've had demographic changes and we're a blue state. Now, that identification is more extreme typically at the district level because, like everywhere else, we've been gerrymandered into completely safe Republican or Democratic districts. So the real battle gets fought in the primaries. There's not much of a race at the general election. That's not as true statewide. And I think the governor probably is aware of that. And I would think that would factor into his decision on whether to sign this law or not.
So you've described yourself as an unpaid gender crank. So in terms of career discussion, can you tell us what that profession is like?
Sure. So my professional life,
This is my third and final act. I spent the first part being a demographer and a management consultant. I went and got an Ivy League MBA and worked in tech. So I did that for the first third of my working life. Then I took kind of a random turn and worked in the food industry. I owned a small specialty food company for over a decade. And now in the third act, I was figuring out what I was going to do for the last 10 or 15 years of working. And that coalesced or coincided with coming to my decision about what I think about gender ideology and the threat it poses to women and girls in particular. And I can't not do something about it. It won't leave me alone. And so, yeah, that this is my job for the next 5-10 years is unpaid gender crank. Now, what I might put on a business card is volunteer, because that would perhaps scare people less. You know, one of the things that I want to think about is how can I reach someone, whether they're in a political office or not, who's where I was 3 years ago, and how can I help them get to their ultimate decision on this topic more quickly in a way that's comfortable for them and doesn't make them feel rushed, but in a more accelerated way than I did, because the harms are real and we need to take action. And, you know, I don't have to fire you guys up about this. And so, yeah, in my private life, in my circle, I would say I'm an unpaid gender crank. I'm a TERF, you know, but when I think about who can I talk to and how can I make them feel comfortable enough to have a discussion with me, I think about, I don't want to put them off. You know, I joke that my pronouns are ye/ha, but I might not lead with that if I were trying to talk to somebody about pending legislation.
So like what is your work? You're finding places to testify, it's all behind the scenes. You're doing a bunch of behind the scenes work, but since I am not in this, I don't do any legislative, like effective influencing. I'm not a good participant in my democratic political system. So what's the actual work like?
Well, first of all, there's one person in this discussion who's been an effective legislative influencer, and it's Corey. So I'm still, no, it's true. The facts support it. I'm still figuring it out. So I'm trying to fill gaps and do the things that nobody else is doing to make everyone else more effective. So what can I do that would, I hate this word, but provide leverage so that everybody else can get stuff done that they couldn't get done before? I've created a Google Drive with a legislation tracker. It's just a spreadsheet for the state of Colorado legislature. It's in session from January through May. I went through every bill on the website that I thought might have a gender component and read it and identified the bills that are probably the most important. And I'm tracking where are they in committee, who's the sponsor, all that stuff. That's one thing that's on the drive. The second thing that's on the drive is a spreadsheet with all of the members of the legislature with information that's publicly available, but organized in a way to make it more useful so that if you want to write to all the members of a particular committee, you don't have to do 50 mouse clicks. It's just right there on a spreadsheet for you. The third thing that's on the Google Drive is templates of letters that people can use to send emails or even to provide written testimony or as a basis for oral testimony like what I provided. By bill geared towards Democrats and Republicans, because it can be really overwhelming. I mean, I thought it was pretty daunting. Like, okay, I want to go talk about this bill, House Bill 24-1071, Tierra's Law. How do I even prepare to talk about that? It felt kind of overwhelming. I've put together talking points that people can cut and paste and edit so they can do that. And then I've created an explainer video. So in 4 minutes, you can get a quick video on how all of this works. And I update it weekly at least. It actually gets updated more often than that. The second thing I'm doing is meeting with the legislators who will meet with me to have a conversation about gender ideology. What is it? Because for a lot of people who aren't at the far left fringe of the Democratic Party, they're not really thinking about this. They may have other issues that are more important to them. Gun control, climate change, whatever. I'm not having a lot of success getting in the door, but I'm not saying no. I'm not giving up. And one thing that has been helpful is there's a new organization that launched a couple of weeks ago called Democrats for an Informed Approach to Gender, DIAG. I don't think either one of you was on the Twitter space when it launched. You may have been because it was a big group.
but I've connected with them and I've already created like leave behind materials and a little official name tag for DIAG. So I have something to go in and talk to people about that I'm associated with that is moderate and thoughtful and has a group of people who care about this and aren't just screaming into a megaphone. There's nothing wrong with screaming into a megaphone. That sounded more pejorative than I wanted it to. But it can be intimidating and off-putting, especially to a politician who has limited time in his or her day. And then, you know, on and on, I'm figuring it out. But this is not something I ever trained for. And I'm not trying to build some personal brand around this. Like, all I want is for all of us to solve this problem and keep the harm from increasing and then mitigate the harm that's already been caused. And if what that is doing a lot of tedious administrative work, that's okay with me.
Getting involved with a group like DIAG, I think, is pretty important. I know they're brand new. They don't have a track record yet. But whatever sort of group that you are, go ahead.
And they're anonymous, too, which is, you know, kind of like, ooh, they're anonymous. Who are they?
They're very brave. We don't know who they are, but they're very brave. So using your name is a lot more effective and a lot more potent than using fake names or not even using a name. So whatever. But getting networked with people is really important because you can have a certain degree of effectiveness by yourself, but you're going to know about opportunities so much sooner. You're going to find somebody who knows somebody so much easier. You might meet person X who's on a first name basis with the chief of staff of representative Y, who's able to get you a 10-minute meeting to make your pitch, right? So getting to know people and getting involved in something is cannot be overstated how important that is. So I'm glad you're doing that.
Do you have any other tips you would give me as I emerge as an unpaid gender crank?
Well, I actually gave a talk at GenSpect that had a number of points that I suggested to people. And I guess I can run down those really quick and hopefully I won't monopolize too much of this conversation since we have a guest. But I would say when you get involved with the political process, you should come into it with specific goals that you want to accomplish. So just having something that activates you emotionally and makes you feel passionate probably isn't enough. You probably want to say, I want to accomplish this specific thing in this specific state. And once I've accomplished that, then I'll circle back around and see if I want to set more goals. But you should think about something that you really want to accomplish because that will get you focused on solutions around that topic instead of just being mad about stuff. And then I would say two more things and then I'll stop monologuing here. The next thing is that this is politics. Politics is unfortunately about compromise and sometimes, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it. So if you come at this and you've been a lifelong Democrat, you're going to have to work with Republicans on this. If you've been a lifelong Republican, if you really want to be effective, you probably need to be open to and listen to perspectives of women and feminists. Like your traditional thoughts about who your allies are, you have to leave those at the door if you want to be effective on this issue, because it's really strange how many conservatives don't want to touch this issue. And it's really strange how many people on the left have become like zombies on it, right? They are not aligned with each other, but they are effectively both your opposition. So you have to make friends with people that you disagree with on really major topics like abortion, perhaps. So you might have to put aside your disagreements about abortion so that you can make headroom on fighting off gender ideology. And then I'd say the last point is, and this maybe gets to the other person who gave testimony at that committee meeting, is that when you appear before power, people in power, you have to be able to pitch at them effectively. And if you go up and you treat them disrespectfully, because even the people who are not the committee chairs, but everybody on that committee expects to be treated with a certain amount of respect and dignity. And if you come up and you start yelling at them, you're going to torpedo your side, no matter how justified your points are, your position is. But what you want to be able to do is, in a very compressed and cogent and concise way, come up and make your point. This is what I believe. This is what I would like you to do. This is why. And that's it. You're done. You're going to repeat your ask at the end. Please vote for this. Please oppose this. Here's why. This is what you should keep in mind. I'm done. But you cannot go up and start ranting and trying to monopolize all of the time. You have to get up, make your point, leave.
There's always a time limit, and 2 minutes or whatever goes by super fast. You know, I remember preparing for this particular testimony, and I knew it was going to be 2 or 3 minutes. So I made sure that my testimony was 90 seconds.
Yeah. If you are prepared to give up and give testimony, if you're really prepared, what you'll do is reach out to somebody on the committee who is sympathetic to your viewpoint and send them a couple of questions that you hope get asked during your testimony. That's not a promise that those questions are going to be asked, but you will always be able to get more time if a committee member asks questions. And by the way, the chair might not even allow questions to be asked. They might be so pressed for time that they just let people come up and give their testimony and buzz them out. But if you are able to send some follow-up questions ahead of time, you might have an opportunity to have them asked.
That's great advice. You know, I had the exact opposite opinion experience because I was not this well prepared. I was asked a question by Representative Herod. It was a kind of a gotcha question that she seemed very proud of. But before she asked me the question, while she held me at the witness table, she wanted to take the opportunity to apologize to Tierra and her compatriots for what they had suffered and to tell Tierra that he was a brave woman for being there. But then she had a gotcha question for me. And I mean, I didn't think I would be asked a question. I'm not a subject matter expert. And I answered it and she didn't like my answer. And I got a light little scolding, which I didn't expect. What?
Is that on the tape? I don't remember that.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. So
what was it? Can you remind me?
Question? Representative Herod said that her understanding was right now people who are getting married, who are convicted felons, can change their name. Did I think that only trans people should not be able to change their name? Was I just thinking that this should be something denied to trans people? And I initially said, you know, I'm not really an expert on the law. And she said, I want you to answer the question. And so I answered as well as I could based on my interpretation of the bill, which is what we've discussed earlier. Right now, if you're getting married and you want to change your name and you're a convicted felon, the judge is going to weigh that against your criminal history and decide if there's good cause to change your name. But under this bill, if you assert that you are a trans individual and that your gender identity has changed, that in and of itself would be the only thing that would constitute good cause, and the judge would have to automatically grant the name change. So I didn't think the comparison was really, really apt. And she didn't agree.
I do remember hearing that, and I remember thinking that was excellent. I remember thinking your response was excellent, and it actually made me think, it gave me a deeper understanding of the dangers of this bill.
Oh, thank you, because it didn't feel that way in the room. I mean, I don't want to discourage anyone from getting involved and speaking up, but be more prepared than I was. Listen to Corey, who gave you some very good tips, speaking from experience. I was just, I don't know what the past tense of wing it. I wang it. I wung it. I did the best I could, but I'm doing things differently going forward.
Well, bless you for getting up there. And that was your first time.
It was. It won't be my last.
Absolutely not.
Now, see, now I want to testify, but I don't want to do all the networking stuff that you have to do to testify. I just want someone to ask me to testify on something, and then I'll
There's a bill in your state that you should testify on, Nina.
Well, loop me in if they want me to speak. The thing is, I don't speak with the authority of a medically feminized eunuch. I don't have that authority. I'm just a white woman, the oppressor. I'm just the oppressor. Plus, I'm Jewish, which apparently makes me a Nazi. And so, yeah, I don't really know if my voice would do any good.
It might, Nina, if you do say something, it might make other people feel less afraid to say something. That's the solace that not solace, but, you know, to feel like you get anything out of when you lose. One of the things you can do is say, well, it might make someone who is scared feel like, oh, if she can do this, maybe I can do this, you know, because there are a lot of people who have opinions and feelings about this and might feel strongly about it, but don't think they have an opinion or they don't have standing that's worth hearing. But if you do, you might inspire could do that. Them.
I'd need a ride to Springfield. So, okay. All right.
Are you universe. In Illinois? Is that where you are?
You're I'm in Illinois? Urbana,
where in Illinois are you?
Urbana-Champaign.
Oh my gosh. Nina, I have something to tell you about where you live.
It's a shithole?
So I was afraid I was going to hurt your feelings. I took a road trip with a friend this summer, which is a separate story. It was me, her, and her bull terrier. We might have or might not have been running a bunch of guns. I can't address that. But we went through Urbana and stayed there for the night, and the dog and I got chiggers.
You got chiggers? Now,
I grew up in Texas and never got chiggers. Many summers in rural Texas. One night in Urbana, Illinois, and the dog and I both got chiggers.
Were you outside? Were you sleeping outside?
No, we were at a hotel, but I walked the dog on the edge of a freshly mown field. And my friend that I was traveling with said, oh, that was a sandy field, because she's from the Midwest. And chiggers live in a freshly mown sandy field. You should have known. And I was like, I'm from Texas. I don't know what to tell you. So, yeah, the dog and I both got pilled. We both got Benadryls shoved down our throats and some sort of cream applied to us. And we were very itchy.
Wow. I've never gotten chiggers.
I hope it stays that way.
I do, too. But next time you're here, come stay at my house. Come stay in the quilt suite. No chiggers. The chigger-free zone.
The times that I've stayed at Nina's house, I've never had chiggers. Not going to say anything about the bed bugs.
Or the leprosy.
The leprosy. Yeah. I did walk away with the bubonic plague.
Bubonic plague, yeah.
Yeah. But it's no, the rats.
But no chiggers.
But no chiggers. Yeah. Next time though. No, it's fine. It's fine. It's I got the bill that you have to go testify on, Nina.
Okay.
And any of our 14 listeners will want to testify on this also if they're in Illinois.
What's the bill?
This is HB 4876, the abortion / gender affirming care bill, which you'll note that in blue states, these issues tend to be stitched to each other. That's a whole other topic. But the synopsis is introduced, amends the Abused and Neglected Child Reporting Act, provides that abused child means a child whose parent or immediate family member, et cetera, denies the child access to necessary care, medical care, including but not limited to primary care services, abortion services, or gender-affirming services. So what this bill does is basically criminalizes or defines as abuse not transitioning your child.
I would happily speak about that. I would need to be hooked up with people. I would need a ride. And I would also need to know that I would be useful, that there isn't already somebody like me who, you know, like, do they need another person like me?
Nina,
but if they do, I'm available.
It doesn't matter if there's already another 39-year-old woman like yourself. To go give
beautiful
testimony.
Is there anyone as beautiful as me? Because
29 and change.
29 and change. Because you've already mentioned on this podcast multiple times that you believe that had you been a child in this age, that you very likely would have been subjected to some of these gender affirming services and that you would have been irreparably harmed. and that your parents would have been coerced into providing that access on the basis of if such a law existed. So I would say, TERFs and trannies, if any of y'alls are in Illinois and you want to give Ms. Nina Paley a contact and make sure that she's got some transportation and that you want to get your butt out there and help protect kids in Illinois, on HB 4876, go look it up on the Illinois Bill Tracker. Do so, because, again, bless Ellen, bless everybody who goes out and gives testimony. This is the way that we help show our representatives that people are out there and they care about these sorts of issues.
When is testimony being heard on this?
Well, it's not scheduled. So what you might want to do is go out to the Bill Tracker. And what you can do on a lot of these, I don't know about on Illinois, but what you can do is register your email address and say, send me an email whenever there's anything new on this bill. And for anybody who has not been involved with giving testimony or being involved in the legislative process, there are so many bills that get filed every single year that just make a dull thud. They never even hit committee. So this thing has been referred to the Rules Committee. That's maybe a good sign, because I think the Rules Committee tends to get so much stuff that they just let a lot of things go. So this might not ever be scheduled. But you can definitely keep an eye on it and see if it ever gets scheduled for a hearing. And if it does, then that's when people need to come out and talk about it.
Okay. The thing is, like, I'm lazy and I'm like, I'm available to testify. Am I like, it's like, okay, I have to go find out how to track this bill.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh yeah, that just tracking the bill sounds like a lot of work. See, I just want someone to call me or email me and say, okay, the bill is going to, hearing, is that what you called it? And, you know, then I could prepare. But it's like all the other it's so much.
Well, you don't have to do anything. And then this sort of build happens and then can just lament.
There's always time for lamenting. I want to get hooked into people. Like, I need to be connected to people who are doing that stuff, who are following it. Basically, I want to just plug into a network where I'm just like, I'm willing to testify. I'm willing to put my name out there and my face out there. I'm willing to do that. Would that be of use to you? So I just have this idea. If I were plugged into that, then when something like this arose, they'd be like, oh yeah, Nina will do that. We could use Nina. But I guess that's
you're giving me
works.
Ideas for Colorado, Nina. This right. is something I need to add to my behind the scenes gender nerdery, is a network of people who want to go testify and arming them to do that. Like, you've given me, as they say in the corporate world, an action item. Thank you.
Cool. If only I were in Colorado. If only you were here. But listeners, if one of you is like Ellen and in Illinois, hit me up.
Now I want to go prepare some testimony.
You've got the hunger.
It's addictive. You get up there the first time and then like, I could do this another time.
Is that really how it feels to you?
I could change the... No. I'm...
Oh, okay. Because that's not how it felt to me.
This is a shtick. No, it's... The fact is, what it feels like is that if you were on the Titanic and you saw the iceberg way out, that you would just keep tapping people and going, hey, iceberg, hey, iceberg, hey, hey, what about the iceberg? Hey, we're still headed towards it. And that's really the drive that gets me to go up and keep giving testimony, is I don't want to sink on the ship. Like, I don't want our country, like our country is the Titanic in this analogy. And the more children that we harm with this stuff, the more of a legacy of the shame. Like, this isn't unique in the United States to have this shameful sort of legacy of medical harm under the auspices of progressive do-gooding. And to see it so far ahead of time and to be able to be in any position to try to head it off and stop additional people from being harmed, that is the compulsion.
This reminds me of many years ago, I spoke to someone who spent a lot of time going door to door in the Houston summers, knocking on doors as a Jehovah's Witness. And I asked her, how do you find the motivation to do this weekend after weekend? And she said, imagine if there were a tornado that was going to hit Houston and you saw the tornado and nobody else believed there was a tornado. Would that make you any less dedicated to trying to warn people about the tornado? And it's really interesting to hear you put it in the particular way you did, because that's how I feel too. The harm caused by this particular movement, this ideology, it, once you're aware of it, you can't not see it, and it won't leave you alone.
Yeah. I wouldn't be able to have untroubled sleep if I knew this was happening, and then I elected to not be involved.
Yeah. And I think it's important to have some sort of fun along the way. Because, you know, a great humorist and a hero of mine was a woman named Molly Ivins, who was also from Texas. And she, one of the many things she said was once, you got to have fun while you're fighting for freedom because you don't always win. And I think that's important too. Like, yes, it's important. Yes, this is a big issue. Yes, it has real harm, but I think it's important to find people you enjoy working with on it and have some fun along the way. Otherwise, it's just a grind.
I believe Molly Ivins coined the phrase, one taco short of a combination plate.
I did not know that, but I would believe it, because Molly Ivins and Ann Richards both are to Texas as Winston Churchill is to England. If there's a quote and if it's awesome, it probably came from one of them.
Yeah, maybe it was Ann Richards. I was living in Austin, Texas in 1992. Yeah, 1992.
We overlapped. I lived in East Austin in 1992.
Wow. And here we are again. We meet again.
Reunited.
Ellen, for anybody who's in Colorado or anywhere else for that matter, who's inspired by your goals to become a grump, a gender grump,
crank.
And fight off
crank.
Crank. Sorry. Oh my gosh. I miss grumped you. I miss discontented you.
Does that mean I get genocided now? Oh my gosh.
I think it's already happened.
Oh, it's my turn to genocide someone.
The
Nina,
genocide.
This,
the genocide.
This feels great.
The genocide is the friends we made along the way.
Although I think between us, Nina, I'm the only one that has an article online talking about genocide denial.
Oh yeah, accusing you of it. Yes.
Yeah, accusing me of it.
Yeah.
At any rate, Ellen, for anyone who's inspired and wants to reach out and network with you, or give you information, insider information, maybe if they know about any of Jared Polis's compatriots who have been prosecuted for felony sex crimes, if they have any sort of information like that. What do you want? Where should people go? How should they learn more about you?
The two best ways to reach me are, not surprisingly, on Twitter, yes, I'm dead naming X, at E Danick. So my first initial E and my last name Danick, DAEHNICK. That's my handle. Or you can send me an email at genderwatchco, for Gender Watch Colorado, genderwatchco@gmail.com.
All right, excellent. Nina, do you have any last questions? Any famous last questions?
I have no famous last words, except thank you for listening, TERFs and Trannies.
Yeah, and thank you for joining us, Ellen.
Thank you.
Thanks
so much
for having me.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to Heterodorks. You can support us by visiting our page at anchor.fm/heterodorks or by supporting Nina Paley at patreon.com/Nina Paley. You can also support us by writing a review on your favorite podcast site, such as Apple Podcasts. Thank you.